Yeah, I just wanted to show people that book because it's only recently come out, and it is, in my opinion, the best sort of general book for introducing people to the principles if you don't want to explain it yourself, or if you do and they want a bit more. You know,
well, it's the last weekend we were here, my flight was delayed 4 hours going home,
oh.
And I finished my book.
What were you reading last time?
Oh, so the last time, so I went into Smith's.
Ah.
Clarity.
Oh, yeah, he's everywhere. Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm obviously meant to read this one.
Did you read it?
I read some of it, and I thought, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
It's a bit sort
bit
of
wordy, isn't it?
And a bit sort of businessy.
Yeah,
that's what it's aimed at.
It's aimed at the business mind. Yeah, exactly. But he said afterwards, I think he was quoting Mark Twain. He said, "If I'd had more time, I'd have written a shorter book." Yeah.
Is this available generally? Or
yeah, it is now. It'll probably be in Smith's and things.
Yeah,
I would think.
Hopefully, I won't be delayed. He also doesn't really talk about Sidney Banks very much in the other book. You know, this guy's saying 30 years ago I met Sidney Banks as his first sentence. You know, and I kind of feel...
I know, I think, well, you know, what Jamie has essentially done is kind of creating his own brand of this,
yeah.
Which other people have also done over the years. And to some degree Michael Neal's doing the same thing, but he's kind of acknowledging his sources a bit more openly, which I always like to do. Yeah.
That's a nice quote. He has the most wonderful job in the world. You find people in various stages of sleep. But then we get to tap them on the shoulder and be with them and say, wake up to the full magnificence of life.
I'm going to use that on my website. Yeah.
Not in a patronising way.
Not at all.
No, that's a Sid Banks thing, so it's not patronising.
Yeah. I actually heard that quote from a guy called Chip and Jan Chipman. They were neighbours of Sidney Banks, so they knew him before he had this awakening experience. You know, they knew him as a kind of regular guy who worked in the mill sort of thing, and then he suddenly started talking about all this wonderful stuff from where they did not know. And I was on a series of conference calls with these two. They're a lovely couple, actually. They've been teaching the principles all their pretty much ever since. Probably, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the schedule, but he was saying that it was Jan, his wife. She went and spent a little bit of time with the group that Sid Banks was talking to, and she kind of, you know, she just got it immediately. She came back a different woman. She completely transformed. And he was like, "What's wrong with her?" sort of thing. And he just got really angry, you know. And the more chilled out and calm and loving she was, the more furious he became. You know how that can be sometimes. he was trying to goad her into getting the old arguments going, and she just wasn't going there, you know. And I think he held out for about 9 months or something. He was just in this state of resentment towards Sid and everybody. And then at some point, he kind of realised he got something. And that was the point at which Sid Banks actually said to him pretty much that quote. That might even be where that quote comes from, I don't know. He just says to Chip Chipman at some point, he says, "You know, we're going to be travelling, you and I, and what we're going to do, we get to tap people on the shoulder and just wake them up, you know, to the fullness of who they are." And at this point in Chip Chipman's life, he's like, "What is this guy talking about?" You know, it was not in his game plan at all. And that's exactly what transpired. He and his wife became three principal facilitators, teachers, whatever you want to call it, and everything else just fell away, and they had the most amazing life ever since. So.
Is your machine on?
It is. Yeah. All the lights are glowing at me, so yeah. Just tell me if they go off. That's what I need to know about. Unfortunately, it doesn't make a noise if it goes off. It just dies quietly.
I was in Cos, I did some watercolours. I had these paints for years. And did a course and I hated it. space. I can't. No, picture. What's your thinking going? Oh, it was very interesting to watch myself doing them because I was trying to control the thing. And in the end, I just thought, fuck it, this is not. My visuals are not matching up what's on the paper because I have no practice of doing them. So I just did some freehand. When they're wet on the paper, they look fabulous. Oh my God, look at them, so lovely. Just in wait, catching that. And some of them are okay, and some of them a bit remedial. The fact that I just did them was, I did one at the church, it was really great. I love it. Well, you must photograph them and do prints and
so
it's like a sort of, you know, in spite of my.
Well, the fact that you didn't take it all that seriously, you actually allowed you to just go and do some painting. That's what my wife, Niveen, she's an artist, and she, you know, hadn't done any art for ages, and then just by kind of osmosis, hearing me talk about three principles, she's just suddenly realised she's got a bunch of thought about it, you know, nothing else. The only thing that's stopping her from painting was a bunch of thought. So when she saw that, she still had a lot of the same thought, but it didn't stop her anymore. She just got on and started making art. It's like her excuses for not doing so fell away. And the friend of mine, Helen, I don't know if any of you know Helen Boyle Dawson? Yeah? She was on this course last year, and she's now doing further training with the One Thought Institute, which is run by Aaron Turner and Mara Gleason in the UK. And she's just started a group which is for creatives and artists, 3P group, in South London somewhere, isn't it?
I think I've joined that, but
Brixton.
I haven't seen.
Go.
Yeah.
Helen's great. And I said to her, that's a fabulous niche to explore with this, because anybody who's in any kind of creative field will tell you, you know, they know about writer's block or creative, whatever you want to call it. Everybody puts something in the way of their creativity, which, if they could but see that it's only thought, it, you know, it's a relatively quick and empowering way to help people get reconnected to what they really want to do. Yeah. I recommend it. You too? You've had experience in this area?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It was very fun. Yeah. And I was just going to say, I love how it's really can be applied to so many things. It's endless. It's amazing. But yeah, I had a talk in where I live in Guna. And it was a free talk. It was just because I never shared any of this, and I don't know how good I am at it, and don't even know if I've got it really. It was very funny because that week, where it was maybe one of those weeks where I felt like, okay, now I'm really caught. I haven't learned anything at all. Right before the talk, I was like, okay, what am I going to go and talk about? Because I'm obviously not in the place where, you know, I should be.
Yeah.
Supposedly. But then, and it was nice what you wrote, you know, when I asked, I mean, that was very helpful, that was nice of you.
I've forgotten.
Pretty much know what you need, all you need to do is show up.
Right.
Just talk about what you know. Like, okay. You know, and that sort
yeah.
of really, because I wrote you and saying, I don't know if I should, can be, should be doing this.
Maybe this is not such a good idea.
And I expected about two or three people to show up. It's ironically at a place called Insight that was recently open. It was like 12 people, so I was really surprised. And I only knew one of them. The people, there were a group of people I expected to be there who all could have showed up for various reasons. And so it was very interesting because working on it, I mean, as I started. Because initially the plan was to just go and sit and talk, you know, and see what comes up. But then I realized maybe I need some sort of a presentation just to keep me, just just to guide me back, you know, just in case I lose, you know, my track or whatever. And working on that, just putting the presentation together, that was fantastic. That did a lot.
Helped to clarify it for you.
It kind of just started slowly getting me back to where I needed to be in a way.
Did you end up using the presentation?
I did.
Yeah,
I used the presentation, but I mean, it was mainly visuals, really. I mean, it was mainly visuals, some quotes. It's just for me.
Reminders.
Also, just to bring me back to whatever point, you know, that would help sort of put it in a way that I can put forth. And I only knew one person, and the first half an hour, or hour, first half of the presentation, everybody was really silent. And I had no idea what
is that
meant.
Good or is that bad?
Just sitting there talking, and I know I look younger than I probably than I am, and to most people over there I look like okay. So they had no idea who this person was, who the guest speaker was, or who talking was. And you can see it in the beginning, they're just sitting there going, okay, you know, go ahead. And I don't know. It was interesting. And then after that, somebody had a question, and from there, something happened that opened up. And I think that towards the end of the talk, it's just everybody there. I was suddenly looking around the room, and there were smiles, and that was good to me. I mean, I felt like okay, that I must have, you know, something.
There's probably a nice feeling in the room if people are smiling.
Yeah, at least they've got a nice feeling, and that's it. You know, even if that was it, that's probably enough. You know, because it was very nice. I was surprised. I was very surprised. I don't remember very much of what I said. Not really. Yeah, I mean the points, yes, like the presentation. But in the middle, there was a lot that came up that I don't necessarily remember. And I was surprised how easily it came out. And a lot of it, like you said, a lot of it is what you've been saying. You know, I can kind of, some of the sentences that stuck with me are the sentences that I kind of...
Yeah, but think that it would be the ones that resonated with you.
Exactly.
That you remember. Yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of what came out. And,
yeah.
Or from any of the videos that, you know, I've kind of been watching. I put a few videos in there also. Small one, Sydney Bank, small one of Michael Neal, you know, just...
You showed a few clips, yeah.
Yeah, just a few clips.
So did it leave you feeling inspired to do more? Or
very much.
Yeah?
Very
fantastic.
Much. I mean, that's
great.
I don't know what, though, because I see it was a 3-hour talk, and then you just get a feel for, you know, what people sort of, they walked around feeling good, they walked around with.
Yeah.
The questions also get you to feel who's, you know, you get a feel for a sense of, okay, this person might be picking it up, this maybe not here, maybe whatever, but it'd be nice to
follow up,
to actually know if that got anywhere or not. And some of them wrote or told me, and they gave me some feedback, and a lot of them didn't know.
You don't know. But that's the value of having something ongoing, you know, or maybe that's got a time duration.
Yeah.
Like a series of talks or classes or something like that, is you get to see, you get to see where people are at and the progress that they're making and so on, and they get the opportunity to feedback in to what you're doing, which really enhances it.
And there was a very good question for me also that got me thinking. Like the one thing that I couldn't, it was there was one lady and she's like, okay, so you're telling me, I understand what you mean with the negative thoughts that they're not true. But what about the positive ones? Like what about, so you're telling me that the emotion of love that I feel for my grandchild is not really real.
Mm.
And that's what it was like. It's real. For you, then it is real. But, you know, I think that was a very good question.
Right, it kind of stopped you in your tracks a bit.
Yeah. No, it was and it was great because then I thought about not like it sunk in for days. It was kind of lingering. I was like, I can't.
Did you find a way in the moment to respond to her that satisfied her? Or
no,
not really.
No, not to her. I didn't know. It came to me after.
Yeah.
It really came to me after because what I realized after about that was that that love is our default. actually setting. That is our nature.
Yes.
So that is being true to ourselves. That emotion is very true to us, and it is part of who we are.
Yes.
However, yes, if there's a thought, good or bad, the way I see it is neither are real. A thought is a thought. Because we can't, if it didn't apply to positive thoughts as
mm-hmm.
well,
exactly.
then it doesn't hold.
Yeah,
you know? So it is true, but I don't know if every grandmother feels love for her child. Maybe not.
Of course
you know,
not.
Maybe
well, of course not.
Yes,
that's see, that's
you
where
know.
You, that's something that you know. If that a question like that came up again,
yeah.
you know, you could point out, even someone who feels love towards their grandchildren most of the time, you could say, well, are there ever moments when your grandkids are around and you don't feel that same way?
Yeah.
Because the chances are there are.
Yeah.
You know, does that kid ever do anything when you get a different feeling that's not the loving one? In which case, it's like, what's happening there? You know, what's changed? How come your experience of that same individual has changed? That's how, you know, you could. There's 101 ways you could, obviously with the wisdom of hindsight, it's easier, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
no, it is. I don't know. I don't actually remember how I answered.
Yeah.
I suppose I said something like, there's still a thought there, or the lack of thinking there.
Well,
but yes,
yeah.
thought is a factor. I think I said, but I don't, but she did. It didn't do it for her, but it was
yeah.
nice because she wrote later and gave feedback later about
yeah.
what she thought.
And what's good is that she must have been really engaging in what you were saying, even to ask a question like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it's irrelevant whether you were able to answer it in a way that felt satisfactory. And the fact that she was even pondering such a question tells you that she's got reflective. She's kind of going, oh, hang on a minute, does that mean, you know, does that...
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of people won't get that far. So that to me is a good sign, even if you don't feel like you can adequately answer the question, the fact that the person themselves is kind of chewing over it and they're thinking, well, does it apply here? That's already good. It's already good. Because
yeah.
she might well find her own answer to that,
because
which
she,
is better.
Actually, when she wrote back, she's been looking and she went on the website and
yeah.
just been searching and reading more about it. And she mentioned that I misquoted Sid Banks and one, you know, so she's like, I was
she's onto you.
And so that to me was fantastic and
yeah.
like great, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, so that was, and there was also the yoga instructor, which there was a yoga instructor in the group. And after the talks, I went up to her and I said, so what's your impression or how, you know, yeah, what's your impression of the talk? And she said something along the lines of, well, you know, it's just things I've been doing go far beyond this, so I don't know, you know.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned
so
this one in email.
And I said, okay, well, I said, yeah, but, you know, probably it all boils back to something, to the same thing.
Hmm.
Everything at the end of the day will boil back to the same thing.
Hmm.
And I left it at that.
Yeah.
But then there was no arguing because it was a bit of a... This is where I could see it's either she really did have, I don't know, you know,
yeah.
different experiences or
yeah.
whatever it is, you know, that got her to realize whatever it is that we're talking about anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe it's true. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe she's been with incredible teachers as well. I mean, I've never, yeah,
it's possible.
All of that. So, and on the other hand, there's also that dismissal
yeah.
that you were talking about, where it's so
equally
simple
possible.
That it will,
yeah.
it will, and I could see that,
yeah.
the way that she was really dismissing it.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
interesting.
Sarah mentioned this in an email to me afterwards, because I was curious to know how it had gone, and I said, you know, if you had the time to respond to someone like that, someone who basically says, well, oh, it's interesting what you're saying, but, you know, what I've already learned goes way beyond this. If you were in the moment, you know, if you had the opportunity now, I might just get curious about that. I would say, like, really, I'd love to hear more about that. You know, I'd love to hear what you've understood from some different path that, you know, has actually enabled you to see something more than this. You know, could you share that with me? So it's a dialogue, you know, and then if you get into dialogue with someone, you can quickly establish whether, as you say, whether actually they're putting it in some category that doesn't belong. And mistakenly writing it off, or whether this person genuinely has, you know, had some massive insight from some other area which case it would be good to know about. My own experience has been it's more often the first than the second. Much more often the first. But we, you know, it's always good to be open to that other possibility.
How did you achieve this massive insight? What was the technique? You know, what happened for them? And then they explain it. What are you using to explain it to me?
Well, exactly. You see, and that's the thing is.
And then they go, oh.
If someone has had a life-changing revelation of some kind, that actually provides you with a teaching opportunity. If it becomes a dialogue, you know, if it's an open dialogue and the person's still open to listening, then you could gently reflect back, say, well, actually that's exactly what this is about. It's about recognizing the power of insight, which is really new thought, you know, and that's what changes us. That's what changes people's lives and behaviors and so on. That's exactly what I'm saying. And the only thing that can get in the way of that is our personal thinking or conditioned thinking and so on. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can respond to it. But the great thing is you were willing to go and do the talk. So well done. I think it's fantastic. Second talk that I know of that's ever happened in Egypt. Isn't that amazing? First one I did it, so 2 years ago. So this is the only other person that I know of who's ever talked about three principles in Egypt. And that, for me, that's very exciting that we could, you know, we could plant seeds in a course like this that travel way beyond the boundaries of Regent's College. And who knows, you know, what can come of that. I love that prospect, if you like, that possibility. So I think hats off to you for being willing to put yourself in the space. But also, what a learning, isn't it, when you get those questions, especially the ones that you can't answer very well at the time.
I think I was so, and she kept apologizing. I'm sorry, you know,
didn't mean to put you on the spot. Yeah.
And I was like, no, you don't really.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. This is probably the best thing that happened.
Well, as long as you don't get caught in being defensive or feeling, you know, something like that, as long as you, or beating yourself up about it, which there's always that danger. But if you don't do that, then it's just so good. You know, it's so good because the person's helping you to see the edges of your own understanding in that moment.
Very much, yes.
And that's always going to be the deal for any of us who are in a teaching position. Mm-hmm. People are always going to come up with questions and possibilities that is just outside of your current knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, that's a wonderful thing about teaching. You never know. It's got nothing to do with how long you've been doing it either, I can assure you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can still go in a group today and people can come out with something and it's like, I really don't know. I'm completely stumped about that. But knowing that you can not know and be okay, that's what saves you, you know. It's
funny thing is, in a way, what I felt being in there is that I know the answer.
Yeah.
But it's...
You can't quite...
I know, but I don't.
You can't, yeah,
you know,
can't quite articulate it.
It hasn't taken form in words yet. You know, it's almost like that. And I think that, I don't know, that was very powerful for me to see that even with something that I can't necessarily, you know, it hasn't really been there, hasn't been kind of turning in my head or whatever, it hasn't taken form yet, that somehow I know that
that's good to recognize.
There's something, you know, that is very true in this, and it will apply, and you know that it's that, you know, it didn't feel like it didn't feel challenged in the sense of it didn't challenge
so you start doubting everything for yourself.
It didn't do that at all, so
that's reassuring,
very reassuring,
and you know what, you know, I've been studying with Mark Howard and Kathy Casey's, you know. Mark Howard has been, you know, teaching this stuff 35 years plus. And in the group that I was in, sometimes a question would come up or a situation would arise and he would go, I really don't know. Can you give me a few moments with that? Because I really don't know. And to me, this was great, you know, because I was thinking that was just me, you know. And like 35 years he's been teaching. I mean, there's probably, you know, very few people with that much experience on the planet. And he's been doing it consistently, week in, week out, for his whole life. And still, someone would come out with something, and he would go, just give me a minute with that. And that was a nice learning for me to see, actually, was that he would just give himself permission to sit with it, not say anything straight away. So just give me a few minutes. And there'd be this like big silence would open up. And everybody starts wondering, you know, where's this going sort of thing. And then at some point, he'd go, let's try it this way. And he was literally, he's discovering whether this is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment, that's what I saw happening. He didn't know that. He was just literally testing it out. He said, let's try it this way. And he would embark upon some response, which was as fresh to him as it was to the person asking the question. And if it wasn't quite right, he's kind of adjusting it, and he's testing it off the person to see whether, is that really what you're saying? Is that close to? And if it's right, you can see that you know, it's not only is he explaining something for the person, it's clarifying it for him too. It's a lovely thing to see. So it's giving yourself that permission to, not only to not know, but to discover freshly. In the moment, so that when it eventually clicks into place, you're as surprised as anyone else. You know, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, I never heard that before. That's very cool.
Just show how big it is, doesn't it? It's
yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's a dynamic,
yeah.
Alive thing. It's not a dogma,
no.
In the sense that there's a set way to teach it. And once we've learned that, you know, we've got it. That's not how you can teach this. It has to be freshly expressed. In order to be impactful.
And some of the answers were coming from
other people in the group.
Other people.
Yeah, that's also great, isn't it?
Because
they see it from a different perspective than what you would have seen. And
so.
Yeah. Do more.
No, I'm very excited. I just don't know like what
shape or form.
Shape or form, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's the same thing, I really did feel people
yeah.
Walk away with something.
Yeah, you could do the same thing. You could have a series of talks.
Mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes.
Six in a row.
See where it goes.
Do a weekend. it's just made up. That's the other thing to realise. The format is just made up. So you just make one up that suits you. But the way, I mean, you've already seen it. There's a value in getting people back. There's a value for them, and there's a value for you.
Like,
yeah.
That's why Ian has a 9 month.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, you know, it makes.
And it seems contradictory because on the one hand we're saying this is so simple you can get it in an instant, and so like you know what's the value in coming back, but. That's something that once you've experienced it for yourself, you recognise that, is that there's a kind of what's the word, like a virtuous cycle that's created, and you work with people over time, you start to see deeply, you start to understand the people in your group more, and it enables you to work with them more creatively. But they themselves, the insights and things that they bring in, they give you the material as well. To take it to the next stage. So
I was just about to ask you that because it was, what I also kind of questioned is whether God, how you talk to, I mean it's one of these things that I feel like can be talked about forever.
Hmm?
You know, and at the same time
there's nothing to say. I know.
What did we talk about all those weekends? You know, there were full days of,
exactly.
You know, after
where does the time go? It's weird, isn't it? It's weird like that. Essentially, we're talking about one very simple thing, really, and we're just talking around it in 100 different ways. But what we're also doing then we're individually sharing our experience of that one thing, and that's where you get that's what fills the time, basically.
Mm.
Everybody's going to have different experience of it, different perspective on it, different thoughts about it. But I was just thinking now, if someone hit you with this question that Sarah got posed, well, you know, I can understand with say if I'm giving myself an anxiety attack by some made up thought about something that's not real, it's not really happening, I can see that. But this love that I feel for my children or my grandchildren, that's real. That's not just thought. How else could we respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
principle of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, like walking in the woods, being with your grandchild.
Yes.
Brings that feeling.
Yeah. So this is one example of what we call, what did we call it earlier? Attributing a feeling to a certain situation or person. Yeah? So that's a whole topic you could open up with the group. That would be one way that you could go with that. Have you noticed that we attribute certain feeling states to certain things, certain people? And that, of course, applies to good feelings in the same way as it applies to negative ones. It's no different. So there'll be certain circumstances under which you allow yourself to have that loving feeling. But have you also noticed that you don't always have it? Even in that same circumstance. See, that's where you get them. that's where you unhinge the person's reality a little bit. Or you point out, have you ever in your life been with that grandchild and not had the loving feeling? Even if just for a minute. Because if that's the case, then the feeling can't be coming from the grandchild. It can't be coming from the relationship alone. It's got to be coming from somewhere else. Okay. That's
what
it.
I felt when he was, and I, so it doesn't matter because that's it.
That's it. Even the feeling of love is coming to you through
you.
The vehicle of thought, because that's how we experience life.
Mm-hmm.
So in the absence of thought, you wouldn't know that that was a loving feeling. You wouldn't be able to describe it as such. Exactly.
Lives, but it also constricts us.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Nice. So there's a whole other, different answer, but it's equally true.
Yeah.
And this could be another way of responding to it. Let's have another.
Have you read that book, Conversations with God?
Yes, a long time ago, but another one.
It was about, I'm not sure I'm going to explain it very well, but so there was God.
You're doing fine.
So, I suppose, that's what life's about, isn't it? It's about experiencing.
Yes.
Yes. I think what I'm saying is that it's okay, all of this, what we experience.
What I heard in what you were saying was what we call God in this context, we refer to as this formless, universal energy, which is behind everything. We're not talking about God as the old man with the beard. Yeah,
no, I'm not talking about
we're talking about this impersonal energy,
yes.
Which just is. And it, without it, there would be nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. But in order for any of that isness to be experienced, it has to take form.
Yes.
And let's say we are at least one of the vehicles through which form happens. And what is thought? It's a form. It's that impersonal energy, which is formless, taking form, being experienced as real, and then returning to formlessness. That's really all we have. So that momentary form, it can be something pleasant, beautiful, horrible, painful, but it's all coming from the same source.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's hard to get words around it, though, isn't it?
It's wondering, when I read the book anyway, I thought, well, I understand that. There's bits I don't agree with, but it's just an interesting concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does he say humans having. God's having humans?
Yes.
Something like that. Speak up, Debbie.
Sorry. I read, I think it might be in that book, I'm not sure. spirituality is God having the human experience, not the other way around.
Not humans having a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
I don't remember reading that, but sounds good.
Mm.
Doesn't mean it's not in there.
I have to revisit it.
Yeah.
There's also something I was thinking of.
That, you know, when you do meditation or something, you get rid of your thoughts. And sometimes I hear myself in this context or other people thinking, yeah, well, I have to get rid of the bad thoughts.
Yes.
It's not about good or bad.
No.
And I think maybe all of us are conditioned in that a bit sometimes.
Yes.
It's about the doing thing that we have to stop doing it to actually experience it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point, and because, and really, it's the same thing that you'll see in the wisdom teachings of old, is that they point to a place which is beyond the duality of life. So what we experience as our lived reality, it's always dual. It's always dualistic. So we like some of it, we don't like the rest. It's good, it's bad, it's male, it's female, etc., etc. But where it's coming from is a place beyond duality. It's neutral in that
that's
sense.
It's a hard thing to find the neutral place. That's what I find very hard.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to find the neutral place.
You're trying to find it using a dualistic
intellect,
see?
But
and that's impossible.
Like, if there's, you know, shit happens, doesn't it? You know, so it's about, sometimes it's easier to be in the old response, or it's just there's so much going on that it's very difficult not to be in it a lot of the time, and then I think I haven't got anywhere.
Yeah, but even, you know, even to say shit happens, you've already judged it.
Yeah, well, I mean there's been some, it doesn't matter what the story is actually, what has happened in the last couple of months, but you know, it's, I mean, I feel there's times when I've chosen to respond differently, or I've caught myself on that I didn't react in the normal way, but as for having a sort of mega impact on my whole being, it's going to be a long time before I get there, and I have a sense of disappointment about that, actually. So there you go.
Okay.
Well,
slow down.
Yeah.
Did you hear what you just said?
I've just prepared the disappointment, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Did anyone hear what you just said?
Mm.
It's going to be a long time before I get there.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. And I know it, but it's...
Now, supposing
I know it's supposed to be in me now, but it just feels like... Does it just have to stop? Stop. Isn't it? And then I think, well, what now then? And...
And nothing.
And nothing,
yeah.
That's kind of a problematic thing too. Because it's like that has been very long, a lifetimes of response.
Yeah, this is a bit like similar to what Dawn was talking about, this future mode. If you've been in a future mode, what you're talking about now is a future mode in your thinking. Well, you have
I'm in a past mode, actually.
Well, they are, it's always the same.
Yeah,
you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
But the moment you say, there's a place to get to, and I'm not there yet, the moment any of us say that, first of all, that's the experience we create for ourselves. We create the experience of not being there, wherever we think we're supposed to be. And then we get to add disappointment to that, or we get to beat ourselves up for not having done it well enough, or whatever it is. But also, the moment we say that, what we've done is killed the present experience. Or contaminated it is a better word than killed it. But we've contaminated the present experience with an imaginary future that we ourselves just made up. Doesn't have any reality. Doesn't exist.
Well, I found that very sad that you say
that. That I say what?
You know, am I contaminating my world? Because I am, in a sense.
Absolutely, we all are. We all are. That's the gift of this. It just enables you to see that it's an innocent misuse of the gift of thought. We use it against ourselves in that way.
And yet there have been lots of occasions when it's been to a lot of other people's advantage that I've done this in the last few weeks.
Maybe so.
Yeah. And I can see that.
Although I would question that, actually. I would question whether anyone benefits from you or I or any of us contaminating our experience of the present.
I'm not talking about contamination, I'm talking about the opposite.
Ah, okay.
I'm talking about.
So you need to be clear.
About people catching themselves on my extremely demented father, my sister brought him to Ireland for a week. He's probably 40% demented. I could just see them sparking off each other. And there was nothing we could do about him. But my sister had to stop. And she's very, she's been a Buddhist and she's teaching meditation and she's, doing huge things, but there she was going back into this ridiculous behaviour with this cranky old man, because that's what he is. When I was there, I wasn't there all the time.
So that's...
That's a positive.
Okay.
But I couldn't fix it.
No, there's nothing to fix. How can we fix something that's not broken?
That's a bit conceited to want to fix it, isn't it?
It's based on a misunderstanding that there's something that needs fixing.
But when you see the sort of a senseless conflict, which is what it was.
Which is all conflict.
Yeah. Any conflict is senseless. With a demented old person, it was even more senseless somehow, because he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was just responding to what she was giving out to him, actually.
Yeah. But you see, you've got to understand something about the nature of how we create our own reality in order to see that. To see the senselessness of it. Because if you don't see that, it looks like a conflict that has got some kind of meaning.
Mm. But then she decided to have meaning because of all the shit in her childhood. And I said, well, actually, that's irrelevant to now. And you can go there if you want to, but
that's
what,
right.
How is it going to benefit you?
You're right. That is as irrelevant to now as your fantasies about where you think you should be in some imaginary future.
Yeah.
I know. It's great how she makes that up, isn't it? And then in the next few sentences she shows how untrue it is. isn't that cute?
I want to feel all the time, and I don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, that's not what you see. I want jam on it, I suppose.
My vitamins would do that.
No, don't do that.
It's great, though, what you're saying, because I mean, I'm glad you noticed that, because that was striking to me as well. It's like, I'm really not getting this, and I'm really disappointed. However, example number 1, 2, and 3 of how different I'm responding to life situations.
It felt to me like you really have got.
Trying to what,
sort out their conflict.
Yeah.
But you understood what you're trying to sort out.
There's been about 3 or 4 of those kinds of conflicts for various people. So it's obviously.
It's life.
Mm. It's been very. I mean, there are positive things in the fact that I'm able to stop and let people and not say anything.
That's huge.
It's huge, absolutely.
That's
after
huge.
After that listening weekend that you did.
Last weekend. It was just
that made a huge difference.
2 months ago. Yeah. Are we listening to our own thinking? Or are we listening
to other people?
Yeah.
And my other sister said, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening to you. It's so, in that respect, there's a sort of knock on with other people.
Yeah.
And I think that has to be that way, doesn't it? In a sense, if you really have something, then it does have.
Oh, completely. You don't have to go out of your way to teach it to anybody. It's going to ripple out anyways. Yeah. But you know, we talked earlier about, I said, we've all got some kind of a stance.
Mm.
This is part of your stance
in
life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, I've got this one, that one. I've got at least five, I thought, so when
you
said that.
But can you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
This one, part of the stance that you're revealing there is this... yeah, well, all this is good, and this is it, but I haven't really got it yet. Or it's not the real deal. Or I'm not getting it the whole time. Therefore, it's a stance. It's a position that you've taken.
I think it's a position I've always taken, actually.
That's what I mean by a stance.
Yeah,
it's
a
habitual
position. It's a habitual thing that actually is about all the other five or four or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's about being on the outside, and I know that that's what it's
there
about.
You go. Nice. But you see, as soon as you see what that really is,
jumping in.
Yeah, but just seeing that for what it is, that's just an old thought pattern. That's got nothing to do with who you are. It's something that you've learned, you've acquired along the way, became habitual, and even though you know now that that's not who you are, you just run it by yourself periodically.
Just testing.
and you try it out on us occasionally as well. But you know, I can see that you know enough to know that that's not real.
Yeah, but I was laughing at you talking about that couple and this bloke being really aggressive and sort of...
Yeah, holding out for his kind of righteousness around it.
Being a bit like that.
Yeah, what we do, we get righteous about these things.
Yeah.
Yes.
I watched one of her clips.
Yeah, she was also a friend and neighbour of the Banksy's.
And she was actually saying on that little YouTube video that she actually hid up from Sid Banksy.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was in such an awful place. Did you see it?
Yeah.
I think she's
the one. She hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she hated the whole thing that he went through.
To be around these happy people.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and the happier they got, the more miserable she was.
Yeah.
We do that. That's exactly what we do. Yeah. She's coming over in June, by the way. If any of you feel a resonance with Elsie, she's lovely, and she's going to do a workshop in June in Essex. I think the three principal movies people are going to organise a weekend or something with her. But there's some nice videos of her on the movie site. But also, have you come across? I don't know if we mentioned it before. The Three Principal Global Community site. They're now getting really organised and putting up some new video materials.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lovely one with Elsie and Linda Pransky, sort of a dialogue. It's very nice, really nice dialogue. And it's a new one. I just watched it a few weeks ago, and she talks about this, what we're touching on here, how resistant she was and attached to her old way of being, basically. Until she wasn't. And then suddenly this whole different being emerges who has a whole different life experience. Yeah.
It's interesting, these 2 months, specifically, don't know how to call it, but had a bit of a challenge. But it's not difficult yet, but it's been a bit more challenging.
Yeah.
I don't know one way, but what I've been feeling, and this is why before the talk I was like, okay, this is, I don't know if I've got it, but I've been going back and forth almost very intensely.
Mm.
Like I see myself going back to, that stance, just the way
old way of being,
and I could tell. I know it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't because I'm in it that I know it, you
mm-hmm.
know. But then, and overnight, or not even, that same evening, I would have, you know, a very intense kind of experience of being present and of
yeah.
being there, feeling very grateful, and that, and it's been, but it's been very kind of aggressively back and forth.
Uh-huh.
It's been
you've been noticing the contrast. Very sharp.
It's so
yeah.
back to back.
Yeah.
And it's like
that's
one minute and the next minute I'm there and then the next minute I'm here and it's been a bit awkward because that hadn't happened before since the first week, and I feel
yeah.
I've been going more deeply
yeah.
into this, and it's been things have been getting easier and easier, and you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's been fantastic. And then just there's a bit of a normal unexpected life event
mm-hmm.
on the way,
mm-hmm.
and I don't, and since then it's been a bit of back and forth, and I know it's over analyzing. I don't know if it's basically, maybe had it not been for this understanding, I'd be in a pretty nasty place right now. Possibly,
yeah, we don't
you know, it's I can see that could be the case, but I don't know that because I'm not there. You know, but it's just this back and forth is really, it's a bit bizarre. I mean, I'm not. It's not bothering me in any way. It's
mm-hmm.
just I'm just observing it and I'm seeing it. You
yeah.
know?
I think that's part of it, is that you're seeing it now. You know, the chances are it's been like this probably for other periods in your life too, but it's almost like you're seeing the nature of that now. So even while it's happening, you're kind of seeing what's really happening. What's really happening is you're going into thought and you're coming back out of it. You're going into it and you're coming out of it. Whereas before it looked like you yourself were going through some kind of,
okay.
you know, do you understand the difference?
So,
I have something similar. I mean, I've noticed something similar, and it's been more recent with me as well, where I can get really clear on, you know, I'm putting a new training together, two new trainings, and I've got all these things coming, and it's like, whoa, it's all I can do to just get it down on paper quick enough, you know, it's so
mm-hmm.
clear to me and it's effortless. And I'll get it all down, I'm raring to go, and then suddenly I'm completely assailed by doubt. And, you know, ideas like, what was I thinking? It's like, geez, you know, no one's going to sign up for that. It's an absolute load of rubbish. I'm ready to scrap the whole thing, you know, literally. And it's like the extreme could not be good. A moment ago, I was absolutely clear. And now I think, what on earth am I thinking? No, this is absolutely ridiculous. I need to go get a real job or something, you know. And half an hour later, that's all gone again, and I'm back on track.
It's a change of mind. Almost like the neural pathways. So I've just got this picture of a magnetic band.
Yeah.
You know, the pathways all going, oh yeah, but you've been thinking like that for years and it's comfortable because you know how to be miserable, happy, sulky, angry, all these things.
Yeah. It's a familiar groove, isn't it, that we've gone down that path many times. Yeah.
It's like a elastic band in the mind. I'm getting these visuals going. But so when they ping, was like, okay, that's broken.
Yeah.
Another pathway set down. And it's in the moment thinking.
Yeah.
It has to be in there.
Yeah, the fresh thinking that opens up a new groove.
But the old brain wants to be, it's like that addict belief system thing you get, but I don't know about anymore anyway.
Yeah.
That's a theory made up by somebody.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just going, I don't know anything anymore.
Yeah.
All I know is my thoughts are creating. Where they come from, I have no idea. Adding nothing to them to give them any power. Hold tight, just keep breathing.
That's one thing I'm still very much learning, is when to act and when not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are some times where you just hold tight, as I'll hold gently.
Yeah.
I would prefer.
Just
like, I just, you know, for me, I just know, don't try and get too busy when I'm in that. If I'm in that mode of being full of doubt and so on, I'd be much better just do nothing for right now.
Like revving an engine.
Just drop it.
But if you rev it, it's just going to go.
Yeah. Anything I try and do from that place, it's going to escalate.
Yes.
It's going to seem more problematic and more difficult. And
sleep on it. Drink some water.
I don't even need to sleep on it. 20 minutes later, I can, you know, it's gone.
Yeah.
If I don't feed it, if I don't give it any oxygen, as it were. So the nice thing is that you...
It's just weird because I don't know where I am. or Sydney Banks video recently. Somebody was saying that if you think you've got it, then you haven't.
Yes, Sydney Banks says that. Many times he says that. Yeah.
So I don't know if that means that, you know, that is it. You know, you will be, it will be like that.
Always.
And it's kind
yeah.
of you will
that's
not
its,
know where you are. Or
that's
or
its nature. Yeah. Now, why? Why is that the case? Why is it that he can say with absolute certainty, if you at any moment think that you've got this, that you've pinned it down, you can be sure as hell you haven't got it? Why? Not necessarily. What is it that you've got?
Not in the moment.
It's not form.
It's not in form, exactly. The only thing that you've got is a concept. That's the only thing that you can cling on to, is a concept. And that's not it.
Yeah, because the concept is
the concept is a product of this
yeah,
that we're talking about.
That's the key. The principles are just
they're formless.
Yeah.
They're prior to all of your concepts, all of your insights, all of your understandings. That's the bit that we spend the rest of our life grappling with, as Sarah says. We can never really pin that down, because that's the nature of it. It's been freshly experienced moment by moment. Yeah. Yeah. No. No. Well, I think the term real is misleading in itself. When we talk about reality, it's misleading because on the one hand, we can truthfully say we are making it up via our own thinking. And each of us now, we're sitting in the same circumstance, in the same room, we're all making up our own experience of it. And each of us would swear that what we're experiencing is real. And even if we put lie detectors on our heads, the truth detector would say, yeah, that one person's speaking the truth. Despite the fact the person next is saying something different, they're also speaking the truth. So, in one sense, that's real. But if it can change in the blink of an eye, how real was it? It cannot be the deeper reality, if you like. If it's so ephemeral, the moment we think different, the reality has changed. That cannot be the, let's say, that's not the deeper reality when we talk about levels of reality. There must be something deeper than that, which is, shall we say, more substantial, out of which all of this ephemeral passing stuff is just coming and going. So there's the personal reality, and then there's the what we could call the impersonal, the deeper reality. Now, they're both real in different senses. But the one that we get to speak about is the momentary passing one. You try talking about the deeper reality and you go Jane was doing earlier. You get close to it and you get the feeling of it, you get the sense of it, but you cannot put that in words. You cannot put it in a form, because as soon as you put it in form, now you're back into the personal reality, and that's not it. Well, that's the thing. That's the danger.
Sort of not even you're vaguely near. You're trying to explain something to somebody.
Yeah.
You have to think up some words.
Yeah.
And you have to know what the words mean. If you're talking to somebody who's.
But now you're in the realm of concept and words. You're not describing the thing itself.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about the principles, someone says to you, "What are the three principles? Can you tell me about that? I know that, you know, I know you've been studying three principles. What is it?" If we start talking about things like, well, it's to do with mind, consciousness, and thought, what we're describing is, it's like describing the menu rather than the meal. Anything you can say about the three principles is not it. Right? It's just the description, and that's not it. It's the meal that we're interested in. It's the experience that you would have if you were to eat that meal. That's what it's really about. But But the best I can give you is this menu.
Stuff, I realised that all I'd invested in this situation was an illusion.
Created.
Because I'd given it so much.
Through thought,
And it's actually ephemeral, it doesn't exist. It's all my must and I should and I will and I can and that.
Yeah.
It's all just a load of art.
Yeah. Which is great, because then you're sharing something from your own experience. Now, it may be, if there's a resonance between what you're sharing and that person's life experience or situation, if there's enough of a resonance, they might go, right?
That's
and it's not because of what you said. They're going, because they themselves have just joined a couple of dots together.
Yeah.
They've just seen something they hadn't seen before. Like, I see what you... And then now they come out with an experience from their own life, which is different to yours, but it's got the same undercurrent, you know. So it worked then, you know, what you shared worked. But you might equally share the same story and someone says, yeah, but that's, if you were in my situation, you wouldn't be saying that. You wouldn't be saying that's just thought. It's bloody horrible, you know.
And then they give you off and out of their shit.
It's gone right past them,
you
see. Because they haven't insightfully seen it. And this is the beauty and the beast of sharing this with people, is that we can't have a set way of sharing it with everybody that's going to work. We've got to listen well, and then we've got to feel our way in to what this person's reality looks and feels like to them, and share something and see, as we're sharing it, we're seeing whether it's actually hitting the spot anywhere close. And if it's not, we'll know pretty quickly. And if it is, we'll know pretty quickly.
The thing is, certain people, including myself, that there's certain things you've done in your past that you have deep regret about. And I noticed that with these other people, it's like an atonement that you have to, like, in a way, you're punishing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have done that. It is thought.
Yeah, you have to continue to feel bad about it.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
They feel that they...
Yeah.
Because that's the reason they find it so difficult to drop.
That's right, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I thought to myself, and I thought obviously, why, if I dropped all of that, so that's not the real me, it's just the thought.
Yeah, if I just let it go.
I'll just let it go.
Yeah.
And other people did the same.
Yes.
Who is me?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, okay, so this person that I am, because I'm a very analytical, I have to think like this, and this person that I am is not who these thoughts are.
Right.
So who am I?
Yeah, who remains if you let that go?
Yeah, who remains if I let that go? And this...
I like where this is going, by the way.
And this question kept on popping up in my head several times over several days. So, I'm not these thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So, who am I?
Yes.
And then I was reading Michael Neal's book, The Super Coach, and the thing that resonated with me was his quote of the definition of namaste.
Namaste.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Which everybody know, namaste? It's the Indian greeting.
Yeah.
Which is usually
accompanying. It's the same as prayer hands, I think you call them in Christianity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they use them. And his definition was, I honor that place in you where the entire universe resides.
Mm-hmm.
I honor that place in you of love, of truth, of peace, and of light. And when you're in that place within you, and I'm in that place within me, we are one.
Mm.
And I just thought, that's the essence of all all of who we are. I just, and that quote keeps on going around in my head.
It's working on you.
It was the way it says, that place in you which cannot be defined, but
right.
is there.
Yes.
It cannot be encapsulated, but is there.
Right.
And that's what binds all of us. That's the one source that we're from.
That's it.
And that, it was that definition, but it was also the realization that if I let go of all these thoughts, that's who I define who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's changeable. That
exactly.
That changes all the time.
Exactly.
And it was just that definition, and I've heard it explained before, and it just, okay, that's what it is.
You're more receptive to it this time.
Yeah, but it was the way it was. You know, sort of,
it's the way you heard it.
Yeah, no, when I read it, I thought, yeah, it's that place which is within all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That reminds me of there's an Alan Watts video, and I think it's called The Dream something, I don't. But he talks about that whole idea of birth and death he talks about
the nature of self,
he
essentially.
He pretty much talks about all of this.
Yeah.
There's this one video that for me was very powerful, just in that way that it leads you back to.
This is in every tradition. Alan Watts came to it through the Taoist Zen tradition. What you're talking about, the Namaste, it comes from the Hindu tradition. And in that tradition, there is the Brahma, which is, it's the bigger. It's that which, of which we are all. It's not personal. It's an impersonal God energy. And if you read in the Upanishads, you know, the ancient Hindu literature, they try and describe it. And what they describe it as, that fire cannot burn it, water cannot wet it, the knife cannot injure it, it cannot be reduced to concept, but it's that without which there would be no concept. It's not an experience, but without it there would be nothing to be experienced, and on like that. And it's all kind of alluding to something which in itself cannot be described. It's bigger than all of that. It's beyond all of that.
The thing I felt about it was when I thought, well, these thoughts are not me.
Right.
You know, it's something I use to function.
That's
in
it.
In this world.
That's beautiful. That's it. That's it. That's right there. It's not me. It's just something that I use to function in this world. Wow. Perfect.
Is that what the psychologist would call the ego?
Yes and no. Because usually when psychologists talk about the ego, they have a smaller definition of that. It's a particular aspect of, let's say, personality. Whereas what I'm hearing and what Trishna is saying is all four is essentially the same in this respect.
Because if you think about it, if somebody lost their memory, say.
Yes. Yes.
Or you're in an environment where nobody knows you.
Yeah.
You know, their idea of who you are.
Yeah, it's gone. There isn't one.
Yeah, there isn't one.
Yeah.
Who are you then?
Yeah, you're free to be whoever.
You're always free to be whoever.
Well, that's
thing.
That's what we don't realize.
I realized that it's me. It's me. It's with my thoughts. When I jump on the train, as of the thoughts that I restrict myself. No, I can't do that. No, I've never done this.
Yeah.
No, I must pay for this. You know, I've done this wrong.
Yeah. And again, that's a stance in life. Some people would adopt a kind of almost apologetic stance towards life, you know, or a stance of inadequacy. I'm not quite up to it. It's a stance in life. It's got nothing to do with who you really are.
Yeah. think there were Sufi, I'm sure in every religion also, but there were mystics who basically were executed, because they came to that, and one of them was kind of came to the conclusion that he said, I'm the truth, and in Islam the truth would be God. You know, so he came out basically saying, I'm God, and people didn't get it. That's what he was talking about.
Mm.
That
there's no difference.
This is not me. What I am is
exactly
something much deeper. So I am the truth. I am God, and because the rest didn't get it, he was executed. And I'm sure there were stories like that. Probably others were executed for the same reason.
And Jesus had the same problem.
Exactly.
I am the truth and the way. And the light. No. But this is big stuff, what you're seeing. It's big stuff. It's not, you know, in one sense, it's not to be kind of dismissed lightly, because you're really seeing something about the nature of what we could call the constructed self, the constructed personality. And you're seeing it for yourself. You're not seeing it just from a concept, from a book, or from a psychology. Well, that's it.
And I thought, isn't it strange? Guess what?
That's
you know, I've been going through my mind, and everybody's like talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
What's different with you than for me is I was saying, and what now?
Yeah.
Well, what made me laugh when you were talking, when I suddenly chuckled and nobody else did, was because I thought she's seen it and she doesn't realize.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the only difference. You don't realize, because you actually said all the things that I used to do, I'm a bit more constructed.
That's
know,
it.
I'm
yeah.
aware.
That's
and
it.
Suddenly that crack has opened.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wouldn't have seen it before. To me, that's extremely powerful.
Yeah, me too.
It is. It's just like when you just saw for the first time you see something.
Yeah.
You recognize your own.
And I did warn you about this. I warned you that the nature of this is such that you'll go through what to any external observer will be quite massive changes, and you yourself may not even notice. I talked to you about this at the beginning of the course. You may not remember, but I said that it's common that this happens, is that you'll make a big shift, but because where you settle is so natural to you, you'll immediately forget that you were ever any other way. there's an example of that right there. So you'll suddenly switch to a new mode of being, and because it feels so natural, because it's coming from the truth of who you are, you'll forget that you've been some other way for the past 40 years, as if it never happened, literally. It's like a veil comes down. Is it, was I? Did I? Really? All my life? It's literally like that. It's shocking. It's shocking. So we need this mirror. I mean, this is the other value of having people come back. You need someone to hold the mirror up and say, listen, mate, you've changed. You've changed big time. You might want to reflect on that and let that sink in. You are not that same person that you're still claiming to be. I'm sorry, but you're not. It's not holding up anymore. We all need that mirror of reflection. And to me, that's the beauty of a group, especially. I mean, you get it to some degree one-to-one, but with a group, you get like a multi, it's like a hall of mirrors. It's even better.
It's interesting, there's a kind of
synchronicity.
Yeah. Each weekend.
That's the other beauty of groups, yeah. We're kind of pulling each other along. Well, that's the beauty of it. We're all saying different things, but we're all touching the same base. I mean, it gives me goosebumps, actually, just to really appreciate that, how that is. That's exactly what was my experience when you were sharing and what you were sharing. It's like, whoa, everybody's touching home base here, but they're talking about it in a different way. Sounds like we're talking about different things. Yeah. I've got no concerns about those doubting thoughts that any of you might have, that might say, I'm not getting it, I don't know, because I still get them myself, you know. But the thing is, I know that they're just thoughts, and I know not to take them too seriously. So I'm not going to give them any credence by taking your doubtful thoughts seriously.
Mm-hmm.
that would be a disservice if I were to take those thoughts seriously in you. I don't even take them seriously myself. So what we want to do is to reinforce the truth. What's been experienced has been a deeper truth. We want to reinforce and reassure that's it. That's what we're about. We don't want to give extra fuel to the old habits of thinking, which are, of course, they're still around. They're going to linger. And even new habits of thinking are going to pop up. You know, we're going to formulate new habits of thought which are equally just as useless as the old ones. We are. And that's just our nature. From time to time, that's going to happen. But we've got a kind of navigation system now that we didn't necessarily, it's not that we didn't have it before, but we've kind of got more of a clue as to what it's showing us now. And once you kind of aware of that, once you see how it works, you get this feedback mechanism going, recognizing that your own feeling state at any moment is giving you that instant feedback about the state of your own mind, quality of your own thinking. You've got a navigation channel open to you that you didn't have. Got a compass, it's like it's been switched on. I can see where I'm going. That's cool.
When I was pregnant, I'd go around asking friends or people or family or whatever, anybody who had kids, why do you have kids?
What's wrong with you?
Yes, I was pregnant. Kind of exciting, but more nerve-wracking, and I really didn't see.
Why would anyone in their right mind do this?
Yeah. So I asked people, and everybody had a, it's beautiful, you get whatever done, and different. Nobody really had, for me, it didn't feel like any of those were very good answers.
It didn't satisfy.
So something was wrong, you know, but I mean, there must be something there, good enough for all these people, to, you know, for humanity to want to continue, or whatever
yeah.
it is. And the one thing that occurred to me when the thought that came in as we and during this training is that as we grow up, no matter, you know, how much, I mean, our way of thinking, our mode of thinking will always be there, our conditioned thinking will kind of always be there on some level, whether we, you know, we accept into it and believe it's reality or not, but
mm-hmm.
to an extent it's there, but and then if you're open enough, you get new thought.
Yeah.
That's not everybody's going to be that open, and it's not like a child. And to me, the one thing that makes it just made sense to me in that context, that maybe having children is a way of letting in new thought that would otherwise be, I mean, there's a degree to which adults can let a new thought, probably varying from one person to the next, but there's a degree. And maybe through children, this is actually the vehicle that brings new thought in, because it is very fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have an adult be that as fresh as a child. It's almost impossible, but I don't know. But anyway, that was a thought that I had.
It seems so, and it seems that's part of the what we love about young kids, isn't it? It's like why we love that young energy. You know, we're around that kind of in-the-moment spontaneity that we all feel we've lost, you know, that we feel it's got eroded away. So it is refreshing for us to be around that, as much as it's tiring. You know, it can be for other reasons. But the thing, for me, if we're really going to... If we're going to get the full benefit from that, we've got to recognize the fact that it is still in us. It's not lost. It really isn't. And I've certainly been around a few individuals who were in their 80s, and they had that. They had that spontaneity and playfulness and even mischief of the young child. And for me, to be around that in the older person is even more precious. than to be around it with a young child. I don't know why that is, maybe because it's less common. You know, it kind of it's like a shining beacon when you encounter it. Have you been around people like this?
Mm.
It's like the glowing example, you know. You just, it's a beautiful thing to be around. They've still got the glint in their eye, they've got the sense of humour, they're not taking themselves seriously. That to me is the characteristic. They don't take themselves too seriously. Age is completely irrelevant, how long they've got left is completely irrelevant. And that person's very often very willing to say things which previously they might have censored, or you know, someone else might have, you know, they've considered, thought about it twice before they've said it. No, they just say it, they don't care anymore. And it's, to me, that's a beautiful thing to be around. And it's a living example, you know, it shows you that it's not to do with age, actually. It really isn't. It's available to all of us. In equal measure.
It's like, you know, you were talking about when you have to think about having children with them. But there are stages and phases in our lives that we can take particular stances.
Yeah.
I'm just at the stage where my child is leaving.
Yeah.
So I can take a particular stance over that or not.
Exactly, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My life is going to change.
It's not predetermined how you have to respond to that.
Yeah, so when people get into later age, you know, just how we expect people to be, we don't have to be that way. So many of us respond in that way because of the old patterns.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true what you're saying, and that's what takes the
spontaneity out of being alive.
The spontaneity and the joy, and it takes the juice out of life.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's available, but
it seems to me, I don't know, I might be wrong, that the majority of people haven't really tapped into that. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the majority of us haven't really...
No, we're asleep.
Or are resistant to the fact that we can be this open and this
We're asleep. That's what Sydney Banks said. Everybody's asleep, and they don't know it until they wake up. And then when from the place of waking up, even just relatively waking up a little bit, even if you're only half awake, you suddenly notice how asleep everybody else is, you know. It becomes much more apparent to you. It's like, oh my God, and I was too.
Isn't that, to me, is exactly where, you know, it feels it answers that question of the gift of children, because for a lot of people who are asleep,
yeah,
this is maybe how they experience and felt.
Uh-huh.
Is through their that's what I mean to
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
Not that it's not available to them, but
no, it kickstarts.
They have not necessarily awakened to it, and and in a way, it seems like it's a vehicle to bring that.
Can be, but watch
back.
Out!
Yeah.
Watch
okay.
out!
Yes.
Watch out! Because in a way, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying now, and it's no different to what Jane was saying about finding that connection, going out on the walk.
Yeah, so you're bringing it back to something.
Something.
Because I'm in it, that's all. That's what I'm going through. It's just a question of why.
Yeah.
You know, no,
I know.
Not now, but...
Yeah. You see, if you make your well-being, your spontaneity, whatever you term you want to put around it, if you make it dependent on anything outside of yourself, it's based on a misunderstanding.
Mm.
Anything. Or anyone. You've essentially you've put a false association in place, which sooner or later will reveal itself to be false. Even though it can seem true for a long time. It's like, oh yeah, but I love my kids and they give me new life and it's fantastic. And you know, my life was really dead before, and now these kids have been around, I've really come to life. And, you know, what happens when they hit teens? You know? What happens when they leave home? How come you're not feeling the same way? You've still got the same kids. Oh, well, it's only young kids that does it. Oh, really?
Let's have some more.
You see what I mean? It's once you go down that route, you know, when we build a foundation on shaky sand, sooner or later it's going to crumble.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking this a few weeks ago, thinking about, you know, we were looking at some really sweet little kids doing some wonderful things, and we were talking about, well, look, there's some really sweet old ladies over there.
There you go.
Why aren't we feeling the same about them?
Fantastic. That's it.
You know.
That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Grumpy,
but,
but
that's what you see. That's what blows a hole in the idea that it's the kids that's doing it. It's the age of the kids that's doing it, or whatever you want to attribute it to. It's the fact that it's my grandkids. It's not any of that. That's just what you're putting on it in your own thinking, and it's arbitrary. See, someone else, I can show you people who will tell you that having kids was the worst thing that happened to them.
No, I'm sure.
Like, my life, I've heard people say to me, my life ended when my kids were born. And that was their experience. Sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a not at all good way.
I'm sure that's true too, you know, but I mean...
Well, if that's true too, what you're saying falls apart, you know?
It's a thought.
See, if there's, even if there's only one exception ever in the world, then that means that what we thought was true cannot be. It cannot be a principle. It's not a principle if there's an exception.
So that thing you said months ago about tapping into the well of everybody's sense of well being in themselves.
Yes.
Whatever it is, but actually that thing that is there is in everybody.
Of course, and in us too.
Yeah.
Of course, no difference.
So that is the skill, or the not the skill.
It's not a skill.
But it's a sort of an awareness, a seeing,
it's
or
an awareness.
A listening, or a
yes.
whatever
yes.
word you choose.
That's all it is. It's being willing to see it a different way than the way that we've habitually seen it. Yeah.
And it makes you feel a lot better.
Of course. Because it frees you from having to be dependent on those things which you think are supplying you with the good feelings. Right? See, that's the trap that we put ourselves in. As soon as we attribute our good feelings to something or someone else, we've now created a dependency trap for ourselves. They've got to keep delivering the goods now. And if they don't, we're in trouble. We've got to find a substitute quick, you know?
That's
so
why
we.
People have problems with their teenagers.
Not only the teenagers,
well,
but
really
it's one example,
why.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Could you explain that for me?
Because people have to find their independence as teenagers, 14, 12, 11, or whenever it starts to happen.
Yeah.
And if you're still looking for that joyful little bubbly person.
I need you to stay that little child for me and be around them.
I need to be that child because that child makes me feel good, and now you're some.
Exactly. They don't seem to be showing up the way that you had in mind anymore.
Well, in the kitchen, she's saying, fed some food, and she goes, who's going to do the washing? I will. You know, it amuses them. I act like an idiot.
Exactly.
That's right.
And I wouldn't have done it if it
was
those teenager
rats.
It's like playing a game with them, isn't it? You know, well, I don't have children, so it's easy for me to assumption. I watch my friends breathing up and doing all sorts of nothing in. Oh, God, thank you. But playing that game of trying to control them, well, they don't even know it's a game. It's trying to control them. on hiding to nothing,
mm.
because that child is going to do what it help it likes anyway, because
exactly.
it hasn't got
your thinking.
Well, not bothered to think, but haven't been taught, they've got their own thing. Your thinking that's got you into that
mm.
thing.
And
that's how we can, you know, help the next lot.
Hopefully. It's the same thing we run into in our own relationships with adults also.
Mm.
You know, it's like when you get together with someone or you fall in love or whatever, and you've got this fantasy idea about who that person is. And again, the mistaken assumption, I'm getting all these good feelings because of this person that's come into my life, right? Problem.
Mm.
Problem, number one, the feelings are not really coming from that person. It just looks like that. Problem number two, they're going to show up differently at some point. And then what's going to happen to your good feelings?
Hate.
Yeah, exactly. First of all,
the toothpaste lid off the toothpaste.
You're in a different feeling state now, and the only way you can make sense of that is to say, well, they must have changed. Well, why do you go changing on me? I liked you the way you were before, you know?
Look at all these songs that billions and billions of pounds that we've made up on this sentimental
I know, but it shows you what the power of this mindset that we're all in, that it's an outside-in world.
I was just saying that as one gets older and, you know, one can get more deaf, you can get your eyesight's affected, even your capacity to maybe think and your teeth and so on. And in a way...
She's painting a rosy picture here, isn't she?
I just feel like it's the universe telling me, right, this is the cycle of life, and to look within, stop looking outside.
Yeah.
You know, with our sensory things, eyesight, hearing, taste buds, everything like that.
Yeah.
It's a way of preparation, I feel, like, to leave this.
Stop identifying with the form, basically, because
that
form is going to crumble.
Yeah, because when your children go and live their lives, you cannot do, you have to spend time alone with your thoughts, with your, and in a way I feel like it's an opportunity to have more time to connect with your inner self, to find that, well, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the preparation, just as the children rebelling against me as they're growing older, was a preparation for what needs to be.
I think it's a healthy attitude. It's, you know, to see it that way, that there is a, it seems that there's a temporary illusory phase that we go through where we identify with the body, for example. That seems to happen to just about everyone. We think we are this body that's walking around. And then at some point, or maybe gradually, it dawns on us that, well, the body's changing, you know, the body seems to be falling apart, seems to be getting a bit decrepit, like you were saying, but that which is I remains, and that sense of self, and it's independent of these changes that are happening.
Yeah, that's what reinforces that truth, in a way.
Yeah.
So, because I think when my thoughts are changing, my body's changing.
Right, what remains?
What remains?
That's it.
And that's what.
That's
gives
it.
This form.
Yeah.
And gives this form the breath or whatever.
That's it.
So I see it as more reinforcing that truth.
Yeah. Me too. Me too. And I've been a student of the Advaita tradition. Do you know what that is? Do you know that term? For me, it's the tradition that's always fascinated me more than any other. In the Hindu tradition, they have many strands of what they call yoga, one of which we have the yoga in the West, which is the postures and so on. But there's actually many paths. One is the meditative path. One is the karma yoga, doing good deeds and service and so on. There's many. And it's said that each person has a kind of predilection towards a certain path. And there's one which has always appealed to me, and it's called the Advaita, which translated just means non-dual. So it's the path of oneness, if you like. And the Advaita teacher, or guru, or whatever you want to call them, they have really only one task. And the task is to show you, or to reflect back to you, who you really are, essentially by showing you who you're not. So just like the, you're describing,
yeah,
by seeing what you are not, what's left is what you really are.
Because that's the question, if I'm not this and this, then what am I?
What's left, yeah. And that's what this path is all about. And actually there's some fantastic Advaita teachers, even here in the UK. They're everywhere. They're not just Indian gurus and so on. There are people in the UK who spontaneously realize this, and they teach from that place of oneness. Say again? Jeff Foster would be an example from here. There's a guy called Muji, who's popular at the moment. I don't know if any of you come across
him.
Muji, he's an Advaita teacher.
He's got shopping kings,
right?
Isn't he?
No, not that Muji.
It's
this Muji.
Yeah, oh,
Muji. He's lovely. He's kind of Jamaican or something from
it's
background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always on the side on Facebook if I'm watching.
Yeah. He's very popular right now. But you listen to his teaching, you'll hear this truth. And especially if you hear it now with the understanding that you have from the three Ps. For me, I can go back to this stuff now and it's like, whoa, you get it in a whole different way, a fresh way, because of your understanding of the role of thought. There's another one, Tony Parsons. He's another English guy who had similar awakening, spontaneous realization. There's many, many actually,
not
all over
the
show. Huh?
Not the author. Tony.
Not the author, Tony Parsons. No, Man and Boy, at least. No.
Yeah.
For me, this is the tradition that comes closest to what Sid Banks was really pointing to, because there's no dogma attached to it. There's no dogma. There's nothing to do. There's no practice. There's no ritual. It's just about seeing your own nature. That's really all it is. It's languaged a bit differently, but
it was on the
Advaita
Vedanta believing that you get something from people.
Yeah.
With your relationships, children.
Yeah.
Also,
whoever.
Jeff Foster had written something. I just knew him through Facebook. I don't know who.
Yeah.
How. Just kept following him.
There's another one, Spira as well.
Sorry, Rupert Spira. He's another English one. He's an artist and a non-dual teacher.
Rupert Spira. Spira. Sorry, just came to me.
And one of the things that I really like, in other words, I mean, it was very nicely written and all, but he was saying that one of the best things you can tell anybody is, I love you, but I don't need you.
Hmm.
And
yeah.
Kind of shed them off that.
Yeah.
Responsibility of or that certain
yeah.
burden, you're free of that burden of
right.
needing to do.
That's it. I
don't
need you to, in order for me to feel okay.
Right.
Yeah, I don't need you to be any particular way or even to stay around. You know, it's nice that you're here, but yeah, that's again.
It was long before I met you, I can get along without you now.
Well,
another really solid person.
Yeah. Okay, this is good. It's a very nice conversation we're having. Let's have lunch. Let's stop and do lunch. What time we got? It's just after 1. So if we stop now, we can maybe aim to be back by 2:30. Is that doable? It's about 5 past. Quite nice weather out there.
The
you want?